Sandra, and Noah.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to another brand new episode of the Theater World Podcast. My name's Noah.
And I'm Sandra.
And we've been off for a little while. We've taken about 6 weeks off. You know, let's just say we had a summer break. We're back for season two of the Theater World Podcast. And now we've got a very special guest for our inaugural season two episode. Our guest this week is a very special person to us. He was the drama director at San Mateo High School for 25 years, a lover of mystery novels, and the writer of the Ah Sweet Mystery blog. And he taught both of us informative points in our lives. Please welcome the Brad Friedman.
Woo! Hi, you guys.
Hey.
It was 28 years.
Excuse me.
Let's get technical, please.
Seriously.
28 years, yes.
Felt like 25.
Yeah, I think of your big 25th anniversary moment concert gala as such a pinnacle.
Which, thanks to COVID, turned out to be my retirement party. So,
yes.
Oof. Yeah, I guess I worked
for another 3 years, but that was it. So it was all
a victory lap after that.
It was pretty good. Pretty good.
Well, I like to say in high school, I spent more time with Mr. Friedman than my mother and father. I did, I think, 9 plays with you. You're my Uncle Brad for all of high school.
First of all, he never called me that. Secondly,
what are you talking about? I did all the time.
I want to know why you didn't cut it for those other 3. What happened?
Because you didn't direct like two of them.
Oh, well, there you go. And they didn't want to use you? Gosh, what's wrong with these people?
Virginia Bisonte directed the other 2, and I didn't get into one of them.
Wow, so close to all the other ones.
Yeah. I hope you discussed that with her when she was your guest.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. Yeah, he brought her actress through the mud.
No, you were the one who didn't cast me.
Oh.
I was?
Yeah, in the sophomore play, but that's fine. It's fine. It's no big deal.
You know, every diva needs a little hit to their head.
It's really no big deal.
So so this is actually the reason why you've brought me here.
Yes, this is an intervention.
No.
What was the play? Do you remember?
It was Rehearsal for Murder.
Oh, well, you know what? Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, like it was a fun play, but there wasn't really a part for me.
And that's exactly the attitude that I hoped to foster with every student. Good play. It's just not a part for me in that play.
Yeah, when I was talking to my sister Ilana about that I was going to interview you, and I asked her what do you want me to ask Ms. Friedman, she told me to ask you to tell the lamb chop story, which is like so much of a piece of your teaching and directing philosophy, I feel like. And like, because, you know, since we're on the topic of, you know, shows we didn't get and roles we didn't get, I feel like the lamb chop story is so kind of crucial to that part of being an actor. Could you give us just an abridged version of the famous lamb chop story?
Well, you might just deal with one lamb chop rather than the normal 3. What do you
like? I don't know.
No. So let me just, this is a longer story than you want. So when I started at San Mateo High School, students were allowed to decide whether or not they wanted the role they were given. And so often I would give someone maybe the second lead in a musical rather than the first. And they would say, no, thank you. I am the music man and that's it.
Damn.
So I conceived of this new policy where students had to accept the role they were given. If they auditioned, they were contractually obligated to accept what they were given. And if they did not, they would pay a penalty, which was that they couldn't be in the next 2 shows, whether they wanted to or not, they couldn't be in them. So that was received by some people as rather harsh. I thought it was quite fair. Most people agreed with me. But it made me bring up the lamb chop story, which is a true story. And I'll tell you very quickly, I did not get into a play when I was a kid. And my mother came into my room where I was really crestfallen. And she sat down and she said, you know, this is the business that you want to be a part of. And this is something that happens to every actor who is in this business. So dry your eyes and come downstairs because I've made lamb chops for you. And lamb chops are my favorite food. So I always tell this story at our opening drama banquet, to let the parents know on the night before the first cast list goes up and many of their kids start hating me, that they should, number one, sit down with their kids and remind them that this is just a show and more shows will come. Number two, if they want to be actors, they should be prepared for this. And number three, it's time to go to the market and buy some lamb chop.
Yeah, I remember the subtext of that always read to me as, I didn't give your kid the part they wanted, so don't blame me and give them something nice so they don't hate me.
Well, if you remember, we always had that opening potluck where all the kids had to sing the night before and not the night after, because otherwise they wouldn't.
It would just be a hot mess.
You're going to go home in an hour, your kid's going to cry.
Right.
But remember this great moment they just had and this motivational story I'm telling you so they don't come crying to me. Yeah.
I always thought you gave people like solos like during that time that weren't going to be the roles, the bigger roles. I was like, I think he's going to give those people solos because.
So let me dash that. That never happened. Seriously, I never even thought of that. And usually that idea was either, whoever was in charge of musical theater with me, whether it was Larry or Rick or whoever, or Matt, they would usually make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
No, but the kids were awfully nice to me that night. It was like sometimes the night that some kids were nice to me. And, it's rough. Casting's rough. I've been through it. I tell them that. And believe me, I've had a few parents come up to me after that and say, that speech was wonderful. Thank you for telling that story. Some of these parents really need to hear that. And that very person would be the one to write me a hate mail. The following day, their kid did not get the Music Man or whatever.
Yeah.
Because some parents are really unprepared for how that affects them and how it affects their standing in the school and their impression of what their child is valued.
Well, no parent wants to see their kid in pain.
Yeah.
And when a kid really wants something, as theater students really want that role, they feel a great deal of emotion if they don't get it. A lot of us hear that a show is going to happen and we plan for months to play that role. It's in our heads. And when it doesn't happen and the finality of that sinks in very quickly, we are devastated. No parent wants to see their kid devastated. They have to blame someone. Why not the little drama teacher?
Absolutely. You're a great scapegoat.
But what they need to do is teach their child, their student, their child. What they have to do is teach their child to face disappointment and to be stronger, because if they are going to continue in this line, it's going to happen over and over again.
Yeah, not a participation award or anything like that.
No.
And that's what everything else outside the theater later in life is also going to be like.
Although Music Men would be a great show. You know, I could see three or four of them on stage singing Trouble.
That's a Virginia Mizante version.
Oh, yes, that is.
Well, Virginia is one of my best friends, and I always get the giggles when I think of all the things she's done. When Tevye came home in the Bowditch Middle School production of
With 12 Daughters,
like he went, Hadl, Chava, Zeitl, Sprinza, Bielka, Molka, Teltka, Shmetka. There were like 40 of them. Yeah. And then the first show I ever saw her do was Flower Drum Song, where Linda Lowe sat with seven girls and they all sang We Enjoy Being a Girl.
Yes, and that's why it's your favorite song, right?
Oh my God. My gosh. I can't do that. I am not that kind of person. I think people have solos in plays because they're written that way. So I don't like to split that way. But that's where I taught and everything. It's just different. So
yeah. And high school is another level than middle school. Middle school is like kind of like a step down and then you kind of make your way up to the top.
Well, in San Mateo High School is a different level from high school. And not because I'm going to tell you that it's the best, because other high schools, my neighbors, they do wonderful stuff. And lots of high schools do as good or better. But there was always, from the start, for me, an expectation from the parent community that we keep the level really high.
Yeah.
That, I've been to a million school plays and I see the audiences cheer at the end of them. And their cheers are just as loud as the cheers at our school because they're cheering for their children. I like to hear the cheers, but what I really love is when a person comes up to me after a show and says, I have to tell you, I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
That is very exciting and heartwarming to me. That means that we've done our job. When they're like, I didn't expect this. I expected it to be a good high school show. But, you know, and it didn't always happen for us, but it did a lot. And when that was said to me, that took on a huge, that was huge affirmation that what we were trying to do was working.
Because, yeah, that was one of the main reasons I was excited to go to San Mateo and work with you, not just because of the, you know, level of talent that we had at San Mateo, but yeah, because of the kind of expectation of a greater quality of production that was kind of instilled into all of us that brought us to a higher level and in turn kind of leveled up the whole production.
Yeah, you like pushed us, and that was what I really liked about it. You pushed us to where we can like be greater than what we were expected to be by other people.
Well, and I always lucky enough to work with people who were on that same wavelength. So first Burl Davis and Jane Zabin and then Robin Tribuzzi, they were going to expect the best and they drilled you like crazy. And then Till and Matt Matey and Rick Reynolds, Larry Rice, these people also expected the songs to sound perfect. So I was pleased that we were able to say, when you get into a show, you're going to work really hard, but the reward will be huge.
Yeah, you treat us like professionals.
That's what we were trying to do. Of course, you were not professionals, and so you had to be nicer, because honestly, we didn't treat you like professionals. Have you, if you watch Smash, you know how professionals treat it.
That's true. And there's always the outliers.
We made you rehearse 6 days a week and we rode you really hard for a reason. You know, we wanted our shows to be as strong as the football coaches wanted to have a winning football team. Just once, a winning football team. San Mateo, yes.
We never won our big rivalry game, but we always won the halftime show. And that's what mattered.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always loved the days when I would get the rehearsal schedule and I'd be called for maybe four days of during the week instead of like the entire week.
Yes.
I'd be like, yes, the day off.
A light week for you. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So you've worked with high school actors for years and years and years. And like in many ways, things come and go and people are the same and different. But is there any like acting tendencies or flaws that you notice across the years universally with high school students that never really goes away? Does that make sense?
Does that make sense?
Hmm.
You know, you guys are... high school students are kids, they're teenagers. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of them come into this because they want to have fun. That was a tougher thing for a San Mateo high school kid because we weren't necessarily going to make everything lots of fun. So every once in a while you'd meet a kid who seemed kind of naturally talented and then you'd never see them again because the show that they did was not the kind of thing they wanted to do. It was lots of hard work. I think that most child actors are at their best when they are either able to do something that taps into their just their natural self or work on a really stylized kind of show and then really learn that style. To my not credit, what's the opposite of credit?
To my detriment,
I did not do a lot of like high school shows where everyone's playing a teenager. There are some good ones out there now. You know, a lot of people are doing the ones.
Yeah, you did Legally Blonde and constantly talked about how much you hated it.
I did. And Grease. Grease is my least favorite show. I think you're going to ask me what high school musical should never be done again. And there's a preview of that answer, right?
Is it Legally Blonde and Grease?
But, I tried to either do shows that could kind of tap into people's natural being, or I would try and do really stylized things so that they could learn the style. So one of our best shows ever, maybe, was Nice Work If You Can Get It, which
that
is
was really fun.
A 20s musical. I mean, why would kids want to do a 20s musical? Which is what a lot of other high school teachers are asking themselves. But we had the ability to show you how to do those dances, how to act that kind of style. And it all came together and everyone was having so much fun doing it that it worked out, you know? It turned out really nicely. But then one of maybe the greatest experiences I ever had was doing the Laramie Project, because everyone was able to tap into some aspect of themselves in those characters. Even if everyone played like three characters,
right,
that were very different from each other, but they were able to tap into themselves. The rehearsal process for that was maybe the best I've ever had, because I decided that a different actor each night would take over the beginning of the rehearsal and do something to get us warmed up for rehearsal. I said it could be anything you want. So a couple of people just did physical warm-ups, but for a lot of them, it was a challenge to come up with an activity or an exercise, which got us delving into these emotions and these people. And we all came out of there exhausted, sometimes in tears, but not so much that we lost sight of the play. It was a good thing. We were very tightly woven together by the end of that show.
Because yeah, I feel like it can be the hardest for high school students to portray real, serious, down-to-earth people. Like sometimes for me, it felt easier tapping into the stylized, themey 20s decades style shows, because that felt like we're being really theatrical, as opposed to, yeah, doing something intensely dramatic like the Laramie Project, which involves so much care and subtlety towards how you treat those characters and how those characters come out of you in a time when you're not really sure who you are yet.
Well, this is why you don't see a lot of high schools doing Death of a Salesman or shows about middle-aged men in crisis, because you guys don't understand that. And I don't know how to explain it to you or to make that so for you. However, what's so interesting is that you can do Les Miserables, which we never did, because Les Miserables is just a terrible show for women. But you can do Les Miserables if you've got a group of kids who know how to tap into those feelings through song.
Yeah.
So we could do that. So Zandra could play a middle-aged woman with five daughters, dealing with a coming pogrom and dealing with the marriage of one daughter and another one marrying a non-Jew. She could do all that in a musical setting because she could tap into that through her music, her understanding of the songs, and just the nature of a musical sometimes allows younger people to do that.
Yeah, I remember doing a lot of research when you cast me as Golda, because I went to Felicia Cooper's mom's house for Sabbath, and I was like, let's get all in there and like really delve in, and was reading a lot of books, and you know, so I was like, I want to make sure I'm doing this character justice, you know.
I want to talk about probably one of the most unique moments of your directing and teaching career, when you stepped on stage with us in A Drowsy Chaperone, or The Drowsy Chaperone. What was the decision like to cast yourself as the man in the chair?
I know that some schools, I guess, maybe use teachers for cameos and things like that. I would never do that. That was a conscious decision. We were opening the new theater, and I absolutely loved that show. I could see why. I had seen it. I had loved that character. That character spoke to me. And so I went to my co-workers and said, would you feel okay, you know, if I did this? This is what I want to do. I want to open the theater by playing the man in chair in The Drowsy Chaperone. And I asked Virginia to direct it because I had faith that she would be loving to all of us. And So that's how we proceeded. That character is a lot like me.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that was one element of it, to be able to kind of dive into that. And some of the darker aspects of that too, because I was not going to play him lighter or anything like that. I actually see more darkness in him than I've seen in some of the other performances. But I also thought, what an incredible opportunity to play a man who gets to sit on stage and watch his students perform on the stage with him and around him.
It was incredibly meta for you.
That's what it was. And I am all about meta. Meta fiction, meta theater, freaking love meta. And so I had my meta moment. And I only wish we could have played it longer.
And then can you talk about the transition for doing that show again? Because you did you did the Drowsy Chaperone again in a very different way during the pandemic years, which was basically the Drowsy Chaperone, the musical, the movie.
You also did it during Zoom with us one time.
Oh yes.
Well, I did, didn't I?
Yeah, we were like, oh, we'll have you
right,
be.
Where you said, Brad, we'd like you to do Drowsy Chaperone again with us offline. And Matt Matei is playing the man in chair.
Yes, yes.
So you'll play underling.
He asked for it, and I was like, okay. So, hey, that Brad, do you want to be Robert?
I was Robert, right? Well, I think I played like 8-1 because somebody didn't show up.
Yeah, you played Robert. Didn't show up.
So, what was I going to say? You asked me about the transition.
The filming.
All right. So everybody's had to deal with their tsuris during this time, right? And I suppose my tsuris is less dramatic than other people. You know, some people have dealt with serious life-threatening situations. Mine was just like a total explosion of my life, you know? I had intended to retire within a couple of years. And then after experiencing the online teaching experience for a semester, I realized that I could not do that. I could not do that. I am far less savvy in technology than I ever fooled you all into thinking I would. So I retired. I retired earlier. And I was fortunate in that I had this student teacher that I knew would probably be a wonderful replacement for me and was so eager for her to do that, that we made sure that she was hired as an English teacher. And she was right there, ready to go. I contacted her, I said, in fact, she was friends with a neighbor of mine and she came over with to her, for their kids to play. And I sat down on the lawn 6 feet apart and said, I don't think I can go back. Do you think you can do it? She said, yes. So I contacted our principal and they did their search, but they included her in that search and she was hired. But she had ideas about what she wanted to do. And one of them included trying to do some kind of online musical that she did not want to do. She had just done an online production of Much Ado About Nothing. She was allowing the kids to write their own play that was going to be performed online. So she offered me the position of online musical director. And that worked out for two reasons. One, I got James Zongas, who is another shining star and bright light in my educational and personal life, who also understands technology and understands how to do this online.
Yeah, he really put it together.
Well, he is more OCD than I am. And if you could see the charts that he created for shots and and placement of people. You know how we are looking at each other in Zoom boxes? We call this our Brady Bunch situation with our show. And it's like, who's going to get the Jan spot? Who's going to get the Marcia spot? Who gets Alice, you know, right in the middle? And the second thing was I needed to do a show that I didn't have to think so much about, like start from fresh. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to also do a show that Stephanie might want to do or premiere at San Mateo High. So I said, why don't we just redo The Drowsy Chaperone. I'd love to revisit it. I did not direct it before. So that's why we chose.
It's a lot of monologues and two-person scenes too.
Well, the interesting thing about that was, so, you know, the people for much of the show, that was James. James would say, so-and-so is going to be in the second box in the first row and the third box in the second row. They're going to come in here. I would come up, we would brainstorm, and then he would come up with some ideas. But the man in chair was my job. So what we would do is Daniel, who played the man in chair, Daniel Solomon, and James and I would meet at Hill Barn Theater at night. And we would use the dressing room area and create his apartment because it had a little kitchenette there. And then we would film that. We did that over several days and basically willed Daniel to become this neurotic middle-aged man.
Yeah, because it's different when he's not actually watching the play out in front of him. Well,
absolutely. I watched it. I never want to do it again. If there's another plague, I'll say, let's just watch movies.
Yeah. Well, because the interesting thing that I wanted to talk about with Drowsy Chaperone, the Zoom, the movie version, was that how it was shot on stage. There was a big green screen and people were doing their scenes one side at a time, where they, in a dialogue, they would be looking ahead of them at nobody, splitting the screen, and then the other person would be there waiting for their lines to be read on the, in another shot on an entirely different day, and then strung together, and then it ended up just looking like they were on stage together talking.
Well, it's not difficult, but it's incredibly time consuming. So the mic is all set up on the actor you're filming, and the other actor comes in and is off camera. You know, they did this in Hollywood all the time. I was just,
like,
I just
stand-ins.
I just took a class on Humphrey Bogart, and in his last movie, he was very, very sick, and he had a very good role, and he was playing with Rod Steiger. He was playing with Rod Steiger. And Rod Steiger came in and was shocked to see that whenever he was doing scenes that were supposed to be with Humphrey Bogart, but the camera was on Rod Steiger, Humphrey Bogart would show up and say his lines rather than have a stand-in, even though he was dying of cancer, even though as a star of that magnitude, he was entitled to have a stand-in feed the lines. He always came in and did that. So nobody at San Mateo High School got a stand-in. He came in and then we would just alternate. So if you were doing the pastry chef scene with Encore, we'd bring you both in and then we would do all your scenes and Encore would be off stage, off screen, saying his lines off mic so you could hear them. No, I'm sorry. That's not what we did. We did this. No, we didn't do this. We film you. We would film you doing your thing and then we would record you. And then you'd have this thing in your ear, so you would hear, "We're pastry chefs. We're pastry chefs."
So lip syncing?
No, you'd hear the other person in you, and so you would sing with the, the speaker thing. Yeah,
yeah. And it sounded so complex.
We'd do your square. So if we were doing she's Janet Vandegraaff, the big company number, and you've got 15 people in it, you had to film 15 different times.
15 singles.
Each side. Yeah, 15 singles. And then edit that all together. So doing the opening number took us 2 weeks.
Yeah. Because, yeah, like I was experiencing it with my sister Alana, who is in it.
Yes.
And she, because, yeah, it was so much different. It was effectively like shooting a movie because instead of going to rehearsal, she was going in full makeup every day to shoot one scene at a time and then be done with it, as opposed to having this full final product that you do all at once. And yeah, it just seemed like a totally unique experience of putting on a show in segments, in isolation, in ways that had never really been needed to be done like that before.
It was very exciting to have the experience for the first time of doing a play that way. And I never want to do it again.
Sounds about right.
Period. Yeah. There won't be any more pandemics happening, I'm sure.
Well, or let's up the technology quotient or something. I don't know.
there'll be a new way to do it now that we have all these alternatives.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because I saw some incredible work done. I'm sure you were watching lots and lots of videos over the last 2.5 years. And there were some incredible Broadway-derived videos of people doing musical numbers and companies from different shows bringing in alumni from the years of Phantom of the Opera or...
Oh, some of the professional Zoom musicals. Like, did you watch Ratatouille the musical?
No.
Oh, it was sensational.
A live version of Ratatouille?
It was a Zoom version.
No.
It was actually fantastic.
Yeah, like, Noah was obsessed with it for weeks.
Me and Alana were tuned into that show from its very conception as an individual viral song on TikTok and then kind of snowballed into a new thing. And it was, you know, up... During the pandemic, we would come down to the kitchen and be like, did you see the new Ratatouille song? And then when they transformed it into this entire cohesive thing, it was beautiful and completely organic. And I hope that there are more shows like that, more than just like, you know, kind of...
The Bridgerton one or whatever.
Yeah, like fan musicals that obviously Bridgerton has to deal with complicated copyright issues when it comes to becoming successful and making money off of it.
Yeah,
Bridgerton musical.
Yeah, and they were gonna put it on Broadway or like a concert, and then they got sued, and now they have not.
But see, here's the thing: so we get this huge international crisis, and out of it comes inspiration, and a different way of creating theater. Not all theater needs to be on Broadway or the West End. Mm-hmm. Not all theater needs to come from the top theaters in the city that you live. And the idea of smaller groups or inspired regional community, whatever groups, putting something together and then sharing it with the world sometimes leads to a lot of dreck, but also sometimes leads to some brilliance like Ratatouille the musical or whatever, or Bridgerton the musical or Harry Potter the musical. And why not just let them be those kinds of experiences? Why not say to all the wannabe actors of the world, you don't have to go to Broadway. Mm-hmm. There are going to be a zillion forums to create great theater that millions of people will see. Look at all the people who become famous from a TikTok video or famous from Twitter or whatever they're doing. You know, the internet has, for better or worse, created a bunch of celebrities, right?
Yeah.
And new road paths.
It's a bigger platform than Broadway sometimes.
And it has created platforms for the potential for quality. If you can dive through all the lack of quality, there's quality. I did get frustrated sometimes with some of my students who were so focused on the online stuff that they didn't see value in classic shows. Mm. I liked my kids to get to know, right? But you know, a lot of classic shows maybe have seen their day or are done. What's that game show where everyone's traveling out west and they get dysentery?
Oregon Trail?
Oregon Trail, yeah.
Oregon Trail, right, yeah. So I had a big fight with my student Adam about doing Oregon Trail.
As the Star Kid comedy musical.
Yeah, so he ended up waiting until I had retired.
And I remember.
He did it. And I went it, and it was awful. no offense to Adam, but the show is awful, you know? I don't know. maybe it works as a little YouTube musical, but I suffered. I'm thinking, why aren't you doing one of the 1,000 great musicals, large or small, that there are? Why aren't you looking for some of those smaller musicals that never made it to Broadway, but were wonderful shows?
Because mm-hmm. The Pajama Game doesn't have a farting dying scene in it.
No.
But not The Pajama Game. There are modern musicals. There are other things.
There's a knife throwing scene in that, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, yes, I sat through what seemed like 3 hours of people farting to death.
Oh, and gosh.
Wondered, is this musical theater? And my studied answer was no.
What about Shrek the musical? Is that musical theater? I want to know from your perspective.
Shrek or Drek?
Shrek.
I have never seen Shrek.
Oh.
What?
But I've never seen Shrek. But through my musical theater class and through a lot of exploring, every once in a while I'll come upon a song that I think is really wonderful. The song where she grows up and sings, you know.
I know. It's today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that theatrical device, you know. This is how
the trans
transition. Turn her into adult Fiona. It's a nice song. I think I have a feeling there is some nice satire of fairy tale characters.
Disney Broadway productions.
I suspect that it is not half as clever as the movie was, which I thought was a very clever movie.
And I think in Shrek the Musical, half of the songs are really good and half of them are like annoying on purpose.
Mm.
But see, Shrek the Musical is the kind of show that I feel middle school should do because it bridges childhood fairy tales and a high school musical theater.
There's a big ensemble.
When you get to high school, don't do Shrek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do Shrek.
Do Seussical.
Well, Seussical.
You could.
We did Seussical, and I enjoyed Seussical. But Seussical's a tough show. Seussical's harder to sing, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a lot of singing and dancing at the same time.
Yeah. A huge but it's also got a perfectly sized cast for middle school as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just think those shows are great for middle schools because it has 1,000 parts. And, you know, all those kids have to be in the show. And you can have all those 6th and 7th graders that aren't sure that they're even still in school yet be Who's or, you know.
Yeah, just getting practice being on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, there are some wonderful musicals that high school kids want to do. There are the modern musicals like, you know, Legally Blonde and Wedding Singer and Bring It On and all that stuff. But I also feel very strongly that there are some classic shows they should do as well.
For sure.
They should get the breadth of it, not just the experience of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our Theater War Lightning Round. These are some hitters questions that we're just looking for your opinion on. Do you have a favorite Broadway diva?
Yeah, you know, you asked me that, and I was supposed to think about that. And a bunch of them just came running through my head. Yes, my favorite. Yes, I do have a favorite Broadway diva. Angela Lansbury.
That's who I would have guessed for you.
But Angela Lansbury is unique because she became a Broadway diva after she'd already become a movie diva.
Yeah.
And that didn't really work for her. You know, she never got the recognition she deserved for her movie roles. She was stuck in mother roles and things like that. And then she made those mother roles the greatest roles of all time.
Her
performance in Manchurian Candidate is one of the greatest monsters in the history of film. But then she started doing, she did MAME, she did Anyone Can Whistle, she did Dear World, she did shows that bombed.
Hello, Dolly?
I don't think she ever did Hello, Dolly, but she did do Gypsy. She was evidently unbelievable as Mama Rose
in
the production of Gypsy. I didn't see it. I've seen bits of it.
Well, and I know how special Murder, She Wrote is to you.
Huh? thank you, no. But... she did play Miss Marple once. She was not correct as Miss Marple. And that's why they gave her Murder, She Wrote. And she was great in that, but I didn't like that show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought you loved Murder, She Wrote.
No, too formulaic. Not really mystery. It was just, you know, which guest star is going to be the killer this time.
Oh, okay.
But I did get to see her live in a couple of things. I did see her as Mrs. Lovett when they came to San Francisco. She and George came to San Francisco. I was enthralled, but I still noticed people running out of the theater, running up the aisles going, this is terrible. I can't believe they're eating each other. And then I saw her play Madame Arcadi in the recent tour of Blithe Spirit.
I remember you told us about that when you saw it.
She was one.
Which was like 93 or something.
Well, and what? She was wearing her hair in these kind of buns. And I think she was having some of her lines fed to her because memory sometimes will play tricks on you when you become older than 40.
Wow.
And she would get you, get ready, Zandra.
I can't wait.
Ready.
Yeah. So I guess I'll need some buns to wear all the time. I'll just be like, hey.
She was wonderful. There are so many wonderful divas. I mean, there's so many great women on stage. But Angela Lansbury is one of my very favorites.
Yeah, I always loved when you had us do the Diva Project in the musical theater class, where we would have to do a report on an assigned diva, and then like
or composers,
composers, and then they do a scene and a song from their catalog.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I always found it interesting to see what men would do with these diva, the Diva Project. But you all worked it out.
Yeah, I had Ethel Merman, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think I had.
Oh, you sound a little like her, you know?
Yeah. Yes. I remember we sang, "We'll have an old-fashioned wedding."
Oh. You sing that part, or did you sing the Ethel part?
Yeah, I sing Ethel.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
All right, next question on the lightning round. What high school show would you never want to see again? It's like on
and
your.
Why is it Grease?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know that it actually is Grease, but I just think Grease is a terrible show. What it says to young people
yeah.
is horrific. And everyone's like, oh, lighten up. Lighten up. Just, you know, there's nothing wrong with leather. There's nothing wrong with eschewing your values for the heart and soul of a fairly stupid young man who doesn't really quite understand the meaning of commitment anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like this.
He's not really right at all.
Not at all. I don't know that Grease is the worst musical ever. It's fun. I've felt like I've seen it or done it. Like,
yeah, like with Grease, like the text is wrong, but the production numbers are awesome.
Yeah, but change yourself for a guy, because that's okay.
The year I did Grease, which was a long time ago, that was my fall musical, and the winter musical was My Fair Lady. And then in the spring, it was the only year I ever did three musicals. The spring musical was Lucky Stiff. So My Fair Lady, one of the greatest musicals of all time.
Another great show about changing a woman to a Superman.
Except she's like, who cares at the end, maybe? Now? Right.
Unbelievable that we did that. Yeah, nobody can that show anymore, and I understand. I understand. but yes, we did two shows about a why can't a woman do stuff for a man, you know? And Lucky Stiff was my favorite show of them all. We did it in the Flex Theater, a little tiny theater. It was absolutely wonderful. And the young woman in it does not change her ways for a man. She changes her ways to be better for herself and her dogs. But yay. But the Grease situation, I remember a father writing me this angry letter saying, why are you doing My Fair Lady? Why didn't you do Grease as the big show so everyone can be in it? Because his daughter had not been cast. Mm. And I said, honestly, if I'm going to do Grease, if I'm going to be stuck with that dog of a musical, I'm going to do it the right way. I'm not going to turn it into a 75-person extravaganza. It's going to be those kids and those kids only. Mm-hmm. And so we tried to do the best Grease we would. And I had an incredible property mistress, this mom, Mrs. Waller, who everyone had in grammar school, and then they had her husband, Jim, in middle school for history. And Mrs. Waller was the most detail-oriented prop mistress of all time. And every night she made a different lunch for each kid in that schoolyard. Each lunch was different every night, so no one had to eat the same food. And each lunch corresponded with the character of the kid who was eating it, you know. So Judy eats bologna, but Kinnicky would never eat bologna. You know? Like, you know, a chili cheese dog or something. So it was quite something. And I was more fascinated with those lunches. If I could focus on the lunches, on poor messaging that I was delivering to young people every night, I was okay with Grease. But I could do without any more Grease. But I could also do it any more Legally Blonde, any more, you know, a show comes out and it's run to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, at least Legally Blonde is all about female empowerment. Every
in a real way
in that show starts out with some strength, overcomes the obstacles that are handed to her, and becomes stronger and better, and not because of a guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, not just Elle, but Vivian and Paulette. Those three all become better people because they are able to channel themselves and their power as women. And Brooke is a powerful woman, even though she's in trial. It's all very lighthearted and stuff like that. So the message of Legally Blonde is fine. I just don't like the Valley Girl thing. I never did.
Yeah.
That's just me. That's just my taste. Nothing wrong.
Is there a song or moment or show that never fails to always make you cry?
There are, I mean, many songs, but if you want to talk about one that, if you want to talk about one that I've done, I would say No One Is Alone.
From Into the Woods.
From Into the Woods. So can I just tell you this, and you can cut it out if it's too long. I've done Into the Woods twice. Mm-hmm. And No One Is Alone made me cry both times, but for different reasons. The first time I did Into the Woods was like a very important moment for me as a teacher at San Mateo High School. I was transitioning from, well, they were transitioning from the former drama teacher. It was kind of, you know, a rough transition for all of us. And I had a wonderful group of kids there, and Into the Woods was just a turning point for me, where I felt like the program was becoming my own. And the young woman who sang No One Is Alone, Erica Rominger, was just, she was just breathtaking. She was a wonderful, wonderful young lady, and a wonderful actor, who went on to do it for a while and now has stopped. But she was just one of my favorite kids there. And she just nailed that song, and I cried. Several years later, I wanted to do the show again. Had a wonderful cast, including Xandra's sister, Gabrielle, as Jack's mom. But we had this crazy music director that we hired from outside. He was a weird guy. And we had problems. But we get to opening night. And as soon as we get to opening night, I knew we're going to be in for a really rough ride. It didn't seem like this at tech or dress rehearsal, but it was going to be rough. And it started with Your Fault, which is a very fast-paced song, but very it's difficult. My fault. I was given those beans. You played me the joy with the Cal 4 beans. So the conductor, music director raised his baton. All the kids were ready. Sean Repetto, who played Jack, was like, it's because of you that my mother is dead. Boom. Da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. The tempo was maybe one zillionth of what it should be. The kids stopped. Sean turned and looked at him. And then in a beautiful acapella, just turned and went, but it isn't my fault you were given those beans, because you just waited with the count of four beans. And they basically did it a cappella. And I was like, okay, oh, wow. Got through that. But then we get to No One Is Alone. And Amanda Farbstein, wonderful actor, played Cinderella. I was blessed with Cinderellas. And he raises the baton and you hear this silence. And Amanda goes, mother cannot. And she turns. There's no music issuing from the orchestra pit. The music director's sitting there like this.
Oh, if you don't want to do my tempo, then I'm just not going to play.
I don't know what he was doing. I have never experienced true physical pain during a performance as I did in the balcony of our theater, as my stomach doubled over in knots, going, what is happening? And the tears flowed for a completely different reason.
Yeah.
That song always gets me.
It's so beautiful and kind of encapsulates so much of what that show means with the parent-child relationships within it.
There's a moment like that in every Sondheim show for me, though. In Sunday in the Park with George, when he sings Finishing the Hat, I always break down. At the end of Merrily We Roll Along, when they sing Our Time, and you know that the promise of the future is not there. They don't know it yet, but they're not going to succeed the way they think. And I cry, and it's such a happy, sweet song. When they sing Someone in a Tree in Pacific Overtures, and you see, you know, everyone loves, I love Hamilton, everyone loves The Room Where It Happens. The Room Where It Happens is Someone in a Tree, rewritten. I know.
Oh, sure.
When Lin-Manuel Miranda would agree that there is an inspiration from Someone in a Tree, where—
Is that, I was younger than—
Yes, yes. And so there's major treaties being written and they want a witness to what happened, but there's only one guy who was up in a tree and could only see them, he couldn't hear, and a soldier who was hiding underneath in case there was trouble, and he can't see them, but he can hear them. So between the two of them, they're trying to interpret what happened through the hearing or the seeing, but not the both. And they get it kind of wrong, but in piecing it all together, they can sort of understand what happened. And I mean, It's incredible. And I just, you know, so Sondheim does that to me. Sondheim makes me cry.
Pardon me, I was there.
You were where?
At the treaty house.
At the treaty
there
house.
Was a tree.
Which was where?
Very near.
Over here.
Maybe over there, but there were trees then everywhere. May I show you there if were you trees please. Then everywhere.
But you were there.
And I was there. Let me show you.
If you please.
I was younger then. I was good at climbing trees.
And the last question for our lightning round. What is the greatest experience you've ever had at the theater?
This could be as a director, as a spectator, as an actor, anything in your entire life.
You know that's an unfair question. It's impossible to answer, right?
Of course, of course.
But we're asking it anyway.
Oh, gosh. Huh. This was where I thought, well, I should probably spend the night, sit up, write down notes, feverishly go over every performance production I've ever done in my life. I got to tell you, the 25th anniversary party was kind of like that because
it was all about you.
Well, because it was all about watching a lifetime unfold of experiences with other people and seeing yeah. what made a difference. You know, I mean, when one of the former students, Andrea, said, when I get up in the boardroom and I speak to people, I channel what we did together and I am able mm-hmm. to sell my idea, sell this. The thought that most people will go into a drama program and come out of it using those skills in some completely different way. And also just watching all these shows unfold.
Yeah, because a successful drama teacher doesn't always mean everybody becomes professional actors.
Exactly.
Exactly. Most of them don't. Some of them become incredible educators. Some of them become people in life.
Birthday party Spider-Man performers.
Exactly.
Well, but you know, I remember being at a party at Melissa Wolf Klein's house, another great Cinderella. And there was a young woman there who I can't remember and I couldn't remember. And she said, Mr. Freeman, I had you in drama. And I said, of course, as any drama teacher will tell you,
yes.
come up to you in the street and you're like, of course. Oh my God, how are you? And how's your, my brother? Yes, I was. Hey. Yes, and or they'll say, my mom? Yes, oh, she's well. I said, good, you know, whatever.
I'm so glad you remembered her.
We're sitting yeah, and talking exactly. with everybody, and suddenly this young lady starts talking about, remember the scene I did in your class? And it was from, she remembered the play. She said, you told me about this and this and this, and you told me to do this with that, and I tried really hard, and then we did this, and then it really worked, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
absolutely.
Yes, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, to know that people have that experience.
Yeah.
And that they never forget it. They don't always remember, you know, learning about the Pythagorean theorem. They don't always mm-hmm. remember the time they dissected, you know, a frog. Or well, maybe they do remember the first time they dissected a frog.
Oh, yeah.
But they tend to remember the drama experiences. Some of them are people who would never have thought of doing drama and they were terrified. And that's why they remember it.
Because that's the time you can have those changes and really discover yeah. that within yourself.
I think you're giving us reasons why we should fund the arts more and have more art programs.
Oh, is that why you're doing this podcast?
Yeah, exactly. That's our
Do you hear that, DeSantis? This is our political mission.
Yes.
Well, you know, most drama programs are self-sustaining. They do mm-hmm. not receive any funding from their districts. We were like that. We probably got our money for the classes based on department and enrollment and things like that. But all the after-school programs are completely self-sustaining. So absolutely, if the knowledge that this can have that effect on kids will help some people empty their pockets or just send a check to Bradco.
Yes.
Do you have a Venmo?
In charge of all drama funding. Redwood City.
And you'll allocate it as you see fit to the shows that benefit It's a trickle down from yeah. you get to see great theater and
oh,
then
I'm
other
just
people.
A little nobody. Exactly. It's a trickle up.
Yes.
I thought you were gonna have a really great set for the Murder on the Nile. You know, you're gonna actually have a real boat on stage.
I don't have, well, we have the interior of a boat. Actually, Dutch Fritz, who did our Noises Off, is designing the set. And
oh, cool.
I can show you a picture of it when we're done, because it's actually a pretty set.
Mm.
It really is. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, we've reached the end of our interview. Is there anything you'd like to plug? I mean, we just mentioned it. You're directing a play right now.
I am. It's the first time I'm back in the live theater in 2.5 years. And this show has been like a year and a half in the making. And it took 6 months to cast. This is the new reality. We had two auditions in January and April. We started rehearsing in August. It's like endless. But I'm working with Coastal Repertory Theater in Half Moon Bay, and we're doing Agatha Christie's Murder on the Nile. We open September 30th. We're playing 3 weekends, but we go to like the 23rd of October because we are skipping that all important Pumpkin Festival weekend.
Oh,
so
yeah, no one wants
weekends,
that.
A week off for the Pumpkin Festival, and then our third and final weekend, Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays at Coastal Repertory Theater in Half Moon Bay.
Wonderful. Well, we'll put the information in the description so people
Absolutely.
Can check it out.
Thank you.
Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on our show.
This has been a great time.
It's always fun to chat with you.
Always fun. Great to see both of you. You've gotten so old, so much older and wiser.
Yes. Well, you are a special person in our lives.
Yes.
Like your, you know, dedication to our process in the arts mm-hmm. has been super valuable in, you know, all the moves we've made after high school as well.
And yet you have been displaying a poster of Cats on your wall in front of me for the entire interview.
To spite you, yes.
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 We didn't bring up his name though at all.
We can't agree on everything.
You know what? He even wrote some songs that make me cry. So I'm not going to disparage the man. He's earned his keep. I don't love his shows. I don't think they're always a successful marriage of book, score, mm-hmm. and, you know, production. But he's done some wonderful music.
All right. Well, we could talk to you for ages about theater.
I guess so. But we should end the show.
Yeah, it's time to sign off. Please follow us on Instagram at theaterworld_readings. We're going to hopefully be back to a regular release schedule.
Yeah,
but,
so.
You know, at this point, we're just doing whenever we feel like it. But check us out and let's sign off.
You both are so cool.
Bye-bye, everyone. I hate theater.
Oh.